We do talk about water on the program a lot, mostly because of the lingering drought in the region. Farmers, tribes, fish all need water, and there's not enough to go around. In some parts of California last year, the Shasta and Scott River valleys in our region among them, the state put controls on groundwater as well as surface water. Drought emergency regulations are due to go back into effect this year, but there's some resistance, not surprisingly. Farmers and ranchers say the regulations, especially on groundwater, go too far. Yesterday, we visited with Scott Valley Agua, Agua for Agriculture Water Alliance. Today, we get a different perspective. We welcome back to the program Craig Tucker, Natural Resource Policy Advocate for the Karuk Tribe. Welcome back, Craig.
Hey, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
It is good to have you here. Brooke Thompson joins us as well, an environmental engineer with Save California Salmon, also of Karuk and Yurok descent. Brooke, thank you for joining us.
Happy to be here.
All right. Good to have you both. So start us off. I mean, Scott Valley Agua says coho numbers are pretty good in the Scott. What is your knowledge about that, Craig or Brooke?
Well, I'll let Craig take this.
All right. Thanks, Brooke.
Thanks, Brooke. So really what I heard folks doing yesterday is trying to normalize what's really a horrific situation for fish on the Scott River. We have average returns of adult coho salmon around 800 individual animals. Returns of Chinook salmon around 4,000 individual animals. These are at least an order of magnitude or more below the kinds of returns to this river historically. So the situation we see right now is really dismal. And coho in particular, their numbers are so low that they're really teetering on the brink of extinction. We're one flood, one drought, one disease outbreak away from these fish blinking out of existence.
Brooke, I can't imagine you're seeing much different along the lower Klamath.
Yeah, from my understanding, especially with the coho, is that we previously had a larger amount spawn, but that was because we did have curtailments and they did end up working. And I think that was just proof of that. But yes, I feel a continuous dire situation for us on the Klamath. And right, the Scott and Shasta River are part of the Klamath watershed. So until the dams come down, these are going to be important areas to focus on.
Craig, the 800 coho you mentioned, which were also mentioned by Scott Valley Agua, how far off is that from what you're saying the historic numbers were? They made it sound like it was pretty good, at least in terms of recent years.
No, this is, in recent years maybe, but you're probably at least one order of magnitude from historic numbers. So, you know, we think historic runs of coho salmon numbered as high as 20,000 animals. So what we're looking at right now, it's sort of the last 20 years. It's been really bad for a long time. And if you plot the trends, they're simply getting worse. And right now, our region is locked in the worst drought we've seen in over 1,000 years. However, water use has not declined in the Scott Valley. So one of the problems we have to solve is we have to have water use being aligned with water availability. We just can't irrigate as much ground during an epic drought as we can in wetter years, and that's what these regulations are really about.
Brooke Thompson, the what was done in the Scott and Shasta Valleys, did that happen anywhere else in California to the knowledge of your group, Save California Salmon? Were there any other places where groundwater came into the mix as they did there?
I'm also going to refer to Craig about groundwater. My specialty in groundwater, I'm a Stanford engineering student, is not in the Scott area.
All right.
So California has had issues with groundwater use all over the state. It led the state legislature to enact Sustainable Groundwater Management Act. This directed water agencies to identify basins that really in trouble, where groundwater was being overused, and identified the Scott as one of those basins. And so the Scott, along with several dozen basins around the state, have to come up with a groundwater management plan to make sure groundwater use is truly sustainable into the future. And folks in the Scott Valley are really resisting the idea that there would be kind of rules and regulations around this, because they've never had any restrictions on their water use until now.
Yeah, California was very slow, interestingly enough, for a state that has as much dry conditions as it has, to adopt any kind of groundwater regulations at all. Did it surprise even people on the conservation side like yourselves when the state went ahead and put these into effect in the Scott and Shasta basins?
It was hard fought. We had to fight really hard against a very powerful agricultural industry to establish these rules and regulations. But I think even among agricultural users, people understand that if we don't come up with a way to share the water, we're all in trouble. The Scott's just like every other region in the West. The government agencies appropriated water rights in the 20th century, which we now know was a pretty wet period. So we overallocated water use, and we made no mechanism for dialing back the amount of water we handed out if the climate changed. So here we are in the midst of global warming, an era of global warming, locked in a huge drought, and we have our agricultural systems using water like it's still this 20th century, and that's just not a sustainable approach.
Brooke Thompson,
and then,
go ahead.
Yeah, to add what Craig's saying, I would say that I feel like the state's just starting to catch up to the science around groundwater. And groundwater as a policy issue is a big deal, not only in California, but internationally. People still do not have good policy on what exactly we do with groundwater, especially when it crosses different lines and how it affects the larger river and water system in our areas. And so groundwater is a complex system, and I feel like we need to focus more on how to allocate it properly and take into consideration the recharge rates, which are getting slower, and then also the pollution of our groundwater wells currently. And the groundwater is going to be continue to be more of an issue as the future goes on.
So on that front, though, Brooke, I mean, the folks at Scott Valley Agua were talking to us about some of the projects they're trying to do groundwater recharge, so they let some surface water seep back into the aquifer down below. Does it sound like it helps at all in the current situation?
I would have to look at the specifics of exactly what's happening there with the rate. I mean, technically that does help a bit. I really do not think it's at the rate that it needs to be for the recharge.
All right. We're talking about, once again, Scott Valley Water. The Scott River in Siskiyou County is a tributary of the Klamath and came under regulations from the state last year that also regulated groundwater because of close connections between surface and groundwater in that basin, largely to help coho salmon, which are listed as a threatened species on the federal endangered species list. So a lot of different moving parts here. So more water for the fish in the river means less water for farming and ranching. And we heard from Scott Valley Agua yesterday. Today we're talking to Craig Tucker, natural resource policy advocate for the Karuk tribe, Brooke Thompson, an environmental engineer with Save California Salmon, herself of Karuk and Yurok descent. You can join us on the exchange with your questions, your comments about the situation at hand. We got a bunch of them yesterday, I noticed. So join us once again at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Craig, do you understand the hydrology of the Scott River Basin and why it is so important for, why groundwater and surface water are identified by the state as so closely connected?
Yeah, Scott's pretty simple system relative to the other basins around the state. It's basically like a giant bathtub full of gravel. An alluvial system. So anywhere, if you think of a bathtub full of gravel with a sort of a river in the middle, anywhere you stick your straw and suck water is going to end up drawing water from underneath the river. And this is how it works in the Scott. So what they've been able to do really since about 1980, when they really expanded groundwater use, they just grow as much hay as they want, use as much water as they want. And the result of that is in drier years, the Scott River runs bone dry. And so obviously fish can't survive in that. And so we really need regulations to have a minimum flow in stream to support fisheries and limit water use to achieve that. And, you know, if you look at the farm records in Siskiyou County, they grow the same amount of hay every year in Scott Valley, no matter how dry it is, the same amount of hay. And when it is dry and every other farm district in Northern California faces curtailments, the price of hay goes way up. And so what it means is folks in Scott Valley have become disaster capitalists, and during a drought is when they make twice as much money. And this is the situation that simply can't persist if we're going to have coho and Chinook salmon survive into the future.
So you're saying they're growing hay for elsewhere, not
just
for
themselves. Yeah, they export a lot of their hay around the North State and beyond.
Interesting. And you said you've looked at the agricultural records that that show these outputs?
Yeah, Siskiyou County publishes agricultural reports, and you can see how many tons of hay is produced in a given year. And you, if you graph that out over time, you see that they grow the same amount of hay year in and year out because they've had this unrestricted access to groundwater. And so when it's really dry and hay becomes a scarcer commodity, the value of it goes up. So folks in Scott Valley, when all the, everybody else is suffering under the yoke of a drought, that's when they really turn a profit.
Brooke, talk to us about the general, the wider picture that across the state of California and places where you've got issues where salmon are struggling to survive and have agriculture going on nearby. Is there often some sense of helping one detracts from the other?
I think in general, that's the argument that's made. For me personally, as an environmental engineer, I don't think that's the argument that it needs to be. There are alternatives for farmers to get water, such as recycled water use, which is a technology where we pretty much take water that's been used previously, and all water, this happens to all water because a lot of people live on the same streams where their wastewater is going into the river, and then it gets taken out later downstream and then repurposed for homes. But pretty much we can use some of this output or water to improve it and then use that for agricultural use to water. There's also several places, such as with our old infrastructure with pipes. In the U.S., we lose about 30% of our water through leaky pipes, where we can conserve more or use new technologies to give water to agricultural industries if we push more for it. And sometimes, honestly, they don't want it. But I think the argument doesn't need to be, you know, farmers versus fish, but I feel like that's what it's often displayed as.
Is it a fair assessment, though? I mean, you're saying it doesn't have to be, but it is often that way, you're saying.
I'm saying, see, that's hard for me because I really don't think it should be. Mm-hmm. It's more that I think that's what it currently is, and that's what it's displayed in most media sources, but I think there are alternatives. But yeah, currently I feel that's how it's being displayed to us as farmers versus fish.
Is the state offering any solutions other than regulations in your perspective, Brooke? I mean, is there enough effort to find ways in which the water could be used by both, and it could end up in the river and be available for ranches as well? Brooke?
Yeah, I'm thinking. Craig, do you have a quick answer to that?
Well, I would just say that things are just so way out of balance where agriculture has been so heavily favored over our fisheries for so long that we're a long way from that equilibrium. And we appreciate, you know, this notion that farmers feed America, but fishermen feed America too. People eat these fish. They are a commodity as well. The Yurok tribe has a commercial fishery that hasn't been in operation for several years because of the lack of fish. Coastal fishermen up and down the coast of California have been put out of work because of poor returns to the Klamath River. And one wild Chinook salmon is still worth more than a barrel of oil. So, you know, we do understand that we need to support the economy and we should support America's food infrastructure, but fish should be part of that equation.
Is that true? I mean, one wild Chinook salmon is like worth, what, $120 or something?
More than that, here locally, wild salmon fillets are going for about $20 or $25 a pound, and these are fish that can weigh 30 to 50 pounds.
All right. We have a couple of emails here or some contacts here. Randy in Roosh is up first with an observation. I've been watching the Scott River for more than 45 years, Randy writes. I owned property in Scott Bar for years. And yes, as your current speaker suggests, the farmers in Scott Valley take virtually all the water out of the river, leaving the fish with mostly rocks to swim upstream over. The irrigation systems in the Scott Valley run 24/7 while the river is nearly dry in Scott Bar. It's time to regulate the irrigators, says Randy in Roosh. So, I mean, I don't see any disagreement with you guys about the regulations being necessary. Craig, true?
Yeah, I think Randy and I are on the same page. And, we're, you know, the goal is not to put farmers out of business and ruin the agricultural economy, but we do have to find a place of balance. Brooke and her family have been fishing for millennia, and they have every right to continue that. And so we simply have to find an equitable and just sharing of the water, and we're going to need government regulations to help us achieve that.
Brooke, share that family story, if you would. I mean, what over the course of the lifetimes of people who you're related to have people seen in differences in the fish that make it into and out of the Lower Klamath?
Yeah. So kind of going on what Craig was saying earlier about the traditional runs versus what we're seeing right now. Traditionally, in my tribe, the Karuk tribe, we ate about 450 pounds of salmon per person per year. And that is now, I'd say, closer to 2 or less pounds per person per year. When my grandfather, who was born in 1919, who is Yurok, when he was a child, he said he saw enough salmon that ran down the Klamath River that you could walk across their back to the other side of the river. And even when I was younger, when the salmon population started to decline, I was still able to catch 130 fish a day for the commercial fishing season. And recently I've gone through a period where I hadn't caught a single salmon in 5 years, and there's been none of that economic income. And not only that, we're concerned about the fishing industry, we're really concerned about our livelihoods just as people, because we eat a lot of the salmon ourselves. We don't just sell it all. And so our actual health declines pretty rapidly in our communities by not having this fresh salmon to eat.
Wow, that is a big difference. 130 fish in one day, and you haven't caught one in 5 years, you're saying?
Yeah, recently I hadn't caught one in 5 years.
Wow. All right, let's take a call here from Derek and Talent. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about Scott River water once again, this time with Craig Tucker and Brooke Thompson.
Hey, thank you very much for taking my call. A couple comments that you may or may not want to respond to. I want to say I listened yesterday, and I really appreciate today you breaking it down and giving us details, facts and details, such as the added money made off of multiple rotations for export and during a time of high prices and the disaster capitalist effect or sort of status quo of that. I think that's really compelling. And I do think there are solutions, and I appreciate the notion of balance, and I do think there's probably some solutions that farmers can turn and ranchers can turn to. But I want to say this, and I think it's important to say, that when we can't find solutions, and it's the existence of the fish versus a lifestyle of multiple rotations of hay in a dry climate, the fish trumps the rancher lifestyle. And that just needs to be said. I don't. That's not what anyone's going for. But the existence of the fish is the sacrosanct item in the discussion. And I just want to make sure that that's clear to people.
All right. So your phone's garbling a little bit, but fish come first is the essence of what you're saying. Is that right, Derek?
Exactly. Thank you, Jeffrey.
All right. Thanks for calling. We appreciate that. Thoughts from you, Brooke?
I have no disagreement. I mean, for me personally, a lot of these crops can be grown anywhere, and they're not made specifically for these landscapes and areas, but these fish have evolved here over, you know, hundreds of thousands, if not more, years to live specifically in this one area, and they can't be replaced after they're gone, versus agriculture can happen other places in the world.
All right, another email here, and this one appears to be from the Scott Valley, Agua. It's Lauren in Etna writes, Craig, water's for everyone, as you know. Please see the Scott Valley Agriculture Alliance website to update you for the current data about fish numbers. The data on the website is accurate and current. It comes from Fish and Wildlife of California and asks, would you be willing to sit down with Agua and discuss the data with Cooperative Solutions? Thank you, says Lauren in Etna.
Well, as long as folks are willing to commit to the principle that water use has to be aligned with water availability, yes. I think for the last 30 or 40 years, we've seen funding and grant programs fund a lot of projects that pick the low fruit but really don't get at this problem of the over-allocation of water. If we're going to fix the Scott, if we're going to fix the Shasta, if we're going to fix the rivers of California, we really have to get serious about keeping rivers wet. Fish need water to survive, so we really have to have a discussion that's focused around in-stream flows, reducing agricultural water use in years where it's lean, in years where it's dry, and that's where we have to have that discussion.
Well, to the wide view then, Craig, I mean, are we debating the management of resources based on conditions that may not come back, at least in our lifetimes?
Yeah, America built its irrigation infrastructure in the 20th century, which was relatively wet period, and it handed out water rights and made all these promises. And here we are in the 21st century, in the age of global warming, and there's not as much water around. So we really have to revisit how we've allocated water and how we use water. And that's not, you know, I'm not blaming Scott Valley irrigators for being in this pickle. There's a lot of reasons for it, but we are in that pickle, and we simply have to reevaluate how we've allocated water in Scott Valley and the rest of the world to reflect the reality of climate change.
Now, do I understand it right that the regulations are not in place on groundwater until perhaps June 21st? Is that what you guys are seeing?
Well, it's not just groundwater. So
yeah, groundwater and surface water too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we petitioned for a minimal in-stream flow after Governor Newsom declared a drought last year. And so we have to achieve this minimal in-stream flow to support fisheries. And if it's not being achieved, then there would be curtailments to water use. Mm-hmm. And so we are expecting that to continue throughout this summer. This is probably the first time in the history of Scott Valley agriculture that they've been regulated in this way.
All right, and we will see what comes out as the season wears on. We have had now two discussions about the water in the Scott River and the groundwater curtailments adjacent to it with Scott Valley Agua yesterday. Today, Craig Tucker, the Natural Resources Policy Advocate for the Karuk Tribe, and Brooke Thompson, Environmental Engineer with Save California Salmon. Thank you both for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.